Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, my friends. This is Mickey Desai, today's host for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast, and I'm very lucky to be joined by Sharon Batch. Am I saying this correctly, Sharon?
Yes, you are. Batch, as in cookies without the S.
How are you today? Thank you for joining us.
Oh, I'm just great. I'm looking forward to a wonderful month. We're about to go on holiday, so I can't complain about that.
So to tell our guests or to tell our listeners a little bit more about you, you've got a degree in mathematics and computer science, but has worked in the for-profit world doing a number of different things before you joined the nonprofit world. How does one transition to the nonprofit world with a degree in math and computer science?
Well, it sort of happened by accident. We moved to Winnipeg, and I wanted to start my own business at that point because I had worked in industry. I'd also been teaching at the Southern Institute of Technology in the math physics department, and teaching is great, but you want to get back into real life. And the University of Manitoba asked if I'd like to work full-time, and I said, no, but I'll work half-time for your full-time salary. And we came to a great agreement. I developed over 146 seminars and short courses for them. And part of that, I ended up with a potential client that wanted a fundraising system. And so that's how it all started. It was just born there. And when I moved back into Alberta, I thought, well, you know, it's a very nice system. We built it based on marketing. And so we continued to work on it. And it's now been in the marketplace since well before 2000.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's really strange that the paths people take as they live their life. Nothing is for sure, and I never turn down an opportunity. I'm always excited about something new. So,
right.
I used to sit up in bed at night and think, "Are you out of your mind?" And I'd go back to sleep and carry on.
Well, I think a lot of people in the nonprofit sector don't think about how important data is to their day-to-day operations, and perhaps that's changing now as we actually get into this frame of mind where people are getting used to the notion that big data is actually quite useful. But early on, you know, math and data science, I don't think people really think about mission objectives. Let me rephrase that. I don't think that people really think about math and data when they're designing their original mission objectives. Perhaps I'm wrong about that. What do you think?
Well, I personally think this is still a huge issue, and I think part of the reason is that, here's an example. When I was at the University of Manitoba, I was able to do anything I wanted. It was in the Con Ed department. Nobody said no to me, and I think it's because people don't like computers. They're terrified of them, and I think it's still the case in the business world, especially in the nonprofit world. People don't like to deal with computers. Consequently, anything related to a computer is technical. I've had people say to us when they've purchased our software, so-and-so is really good at a keyboard. You know, is that really the criteria you want? Somebody's good on a keyboard?
Right.
There's so much more to it because data is so exciting. And the problem is that, you know, they'll put their gifts in, they record the donations, but very, very little else. It's sort of stuck in the gray cells. And as people come and go, you know, a lot of that information's lost, but that is where the power lies. It's the knowledge. So we call it wealth. It's the wealth you're building, and that's the knowledge of your donors. Mm-hmm. So I still think it's a huge problem. I think it's one of those. I was mentioning that AFP in Toronto has an event called Money, Death, and Sex or something. This is the new topic area for the 2020 conference. And I was thinking data is probably the real dirty secret that nobody really wants to talk about because I think it makes people feel that they're not doing their job or whatever. But, you know, you don't have good data. You can sit in all the major gift seminars you want, and it's a waste of time.
Well, perhaps that's where we should take this episode, which is to say, how does the average nonprofit make better use of their data? My guess is that a lot of nonprofits aren't even collecting much data in the way that they do service provision.
I think you're right. And I think that... Well, you know what I think the problem is, and what we did this past year is I interviewed two high-profile donors, $1 million people, and I interviewed them because I thought, how do you get charities to invest in change? And the only way I could see is maybe it has to come from the very top, from the very highest donors, so that they can say, yes, we're managing effectively. And I heard stories that would just make your hair curl. It was just really one fellow. He was the chancellor of the university here. He's a very successful businessman, a huge philanthropist. And he told me a story. He said, well, you know, I gave a large donation to one of the foundations here so that they could do this particular project. He said, all of a sudden, the whole fund development department quit. He said, I was really surprised because they seemed like a very good team. So he went back to the charity and asked, you know, how his project was going. And guess what? Nobody could tell him. I mean, really? You're going to give your money to an organization that's that disorganized? I think money's pretty precious. People work very hard for it. And I think mm-hmm. charities really have to take another look at how they're handling the information side. It's not just, I got a gift and now I'm off and running. Mm-hmm. It's, I've got a gift, but who gave it to me? Why did they give it to me? How can I continue to invest time with that donor? Not just to ask them for more money, but to help them understand more about how they're helping us achieve our goals. And I think sometimes that gets lost in the grab for dollars.
I think that's right. So let's pretend for a minute that you get a nonprofit client that needs to do a better job at utilizing data and incorporating that into their overall strategy. How would you get them started to doing that?
Well, I wrote a book on this. And this book is the solution.
Yeah.
We run a course called 4 Days. And in 4 days, we have a client bring their data in. We have a lovely little lab, and we all sit and work on it. And the first thing we do is we evaluate the quality of the data itself. So we take a look at naming conventions so you don't end up with a charity in there 4 or 5 times. We take a look at standards in that area. We look at addressing standards as well. In Canada and the U.S., there's very, very strict rules that they like to see in terms of no punctuation, etc. So how is the quality of the data? How neat is it? Let's put it that way. So we work on the cleanup on that for one day and examine it. The next day, we take a look at who's in the database. And what we want to know there are, of the higher level donors and funders, say your foundations and your private donors, what do you know about these people? And so we start looking at content. And when we look at content, we want to see what types of information is really relevant. And we don't necessarily want it in notes. Notes are a secondary resource. We want a really good, well-defined coding system so that you can find people reliably and quickly. And from there, we go to the next step. And for the corporate group, we like to segment them. So, you know, who are the financial people? Who are the educators? Who are all the different groups? Because this is also a wonderful way to incorporate more people into your target market. And then who works for them? We want to know who the contacts are. And I don't want just a name. I want to know why they're there. Like, how do they become an asset to your organization? You know, what is it that makes them special that helps you do your job? So you can keep in touch with them and keep that information up to date. And then after that, the fourth day, and this doesn't necessarily have to happen day one, day two, day three, day four, but we actually will do this. And then the fourth day, we look at what are the rules, because there has to be rules, because, you know, there was a group that did a big article in the U.S. called Underdeveloped. And they all thought it was leadership. Well, leadership is one thing, but good management is entirely different. And you need to have good rules of execution. It's like going to your best restaurant. You don't get a high performance and a high value chef if your place is disorganized and it's a mess and nobody knows what they're doing and you can't find things. So it's the same concept, only we've taken it into the nebulous world of data. And even, when I was in Manitoba, we developed a system called knowledge management, which is really taking the tools that you work with. In our office, our electronic tools are organized so that I have 15-second access. If I can't find what I'm looking for in 15 seconds, I'm not a happy camper. And it may be me that did it wrong, but it's not just how we work here. It's actually a corrective maintenance. So if it's not put away properly, we can correct that. Mm-hmm. And so all these different elements, how you manage your toolkit, your assets, how you look at your data in terms of what information you want. And it doesn't have to be, a lot of people look at this. I had one board member say, well, that's a lot of information. You have to collect that. Well, if you don't collect it, where does it go? Right. Like, that's a silly thing to say. And I didn't say that, though. That would have been rude. That would have been really rude, but I was thinking it. And, you know, there, take a foundation, for example. I want to know their giving criteria, and I want those in keywords. I want to know when they accept their proposals. If they accept them any time, I want to know that too. And if they have no criteria, I want to know that as well. Mm-hmm. And I want to know what proposals we've sent to them and which ones have been successful and which ones have been declined. I mean, that is not a lot of information to put in. And if it's done on an ongoing basis, you can then keep it up to date. And the same thing with your donors. I like to know, well, we had a young client and he had a little Yorkie called Watson. You call that guy up and ask about Watson. Oh, gosh, city. He loved Watson. And, you know, we had dogs too. We used to bring them to the office. How's Lisa and Chanel? Oh my gosh, they're great. You know? So data is your wealth. It's how people understand that you care more about them than just the wallet.
Right.
And that people want to continuing to help your charity. So this is an area that just, you know, blows my mind. I cannot understand why there isn't more emphasis on just tracking little bits and pieces and keeping them up to date.
Right.
So that,
I think people think of data as being sort of a bad thing because there's so many bad ways that data has been used lately. There's, you know, you don't have to go far in the press to understand that data can be misused. But on the other hand, you know, on the other hand, data is only, in my mind, it's for a nonprofit's purposes, it's actually helping you be more human with your, you know, with your stakeholders. And it's just giving the nonprofit development officer or the people who do the mission providing activities, it just gives you more information about the humanity of whatever it is that you're dealing with. And there's nothing wrong in having that intelligence before you walk into, you know, a major gift ask or a seminar or wherever it is that your stakeholders may be.
I agree with you 100%. 100%.
So we're almost out of time for this episode, but you mentioned you wrote a book, and that is From Chaos to Control. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's called Build a High Performance Team Using Knowledge Management. You know, I know there's a lot of really well-meaning people out there. We work with some of the nicest people in the whole wide world. And our goal in writing that was to help them because, you know, there's nothing worse than sitting down in front of a donor and all of a sudden finding out you don't know what you need to know about them.
Right.
And a lot of these things, it's not rocket science. Somebody read our book and they said, well, it sounds like being organized. And I'm going, duh, really? Yeah, it's like any other business. You go into an operating room and you're having something done. You expect them to be organized. And because your time's better used, your stress level is lower, the dollars you make are better for the charity, which means that your salary's better. I mean, you know, there's all these things that come out of just handling information a little bit better and being in an organized environment. And we do that in our office, and I golf on Friday afternoons and go to a movie on Tuesday. So, you know,
well, and it's all beneficial. Yeah, no, and I thank you for the advance copy. I got to say, of all the books that I've read on, you know, team development and leadership, you know, this book isn't really, in my mind, again, isn't really about data and isn't really about, I mean, it is obviously, but this book touches on leadership. It touches on humanity. It touches on performance, team measures and stuff like that. And it's really well put together and very well organized. I think it's one of the better books I've read on this subject matter in quite a long time.
Thank you.
Yeah. And since we are running out of time, could we pick up a second episode, number two here, and talk about the book a little bit more? And this other thing, the Mother Hubbard syndrome.
Absolutely.
if a listener wanted to be in touch with you or maybe check out Chaos to Control, how would they do that?
Oh, you know what, Mickey, they're welcome to, they can email us. You can buy the book on Amazon. But you can also, send us a note and we'd be happy to ship a copy at no cost. You can send us a note at ease at, and then batch group, batschgroup.com. And we'd be happy to share this. This is, our goal is to make, well, the nonprofit sector is hugely important. We want it to be as successful as possible.
Thank you, Sharon. Thank you for doing that. I'm hoping you get to distribute some good numbers of copies that way. And to our listener, please do take Sharon up on the offer of a free book. I think you're going to appreciate it. And if you have any feedback for us on the Nonprofit Snapcast, please please visit nonprofitsnapcast.org and you can leave us a note there. And if you're liking what you're hearing, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. In the meantime, we will have another episode for you in about a week. Thanks again.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.